shopping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
Right on time. everybody's having a good chuckle at my expense yesterday. that included the guys downstairs, Mike Deliberto and Frank McGoey. Everybody was like, "What's the matter? You can't take your Vegas trip." And you know what? Maybe that is the explanation. I do feel back on the beam today. I'll tell you that it did take an extra day. I must admit. Well, and 9 hours, 9 hours of sleep, which for me is like a day and a half, 2 days worth of sleep. So I was ready to go bright and early. And the one thing missing, I was ready for coffee here, and I think Stu Slagle is on his way up here. Stu promised me beignets in exchange for publicizing the stakes closing here maybe three weeks ago. So he just texted me. He's on his way. He said, "Where are you broadcasting from?" So he can bring the beignets. The funny thing about up here in this press box, I literally think every year I'm the last guy to brew a pot of coffee. It could be because it's like it's setting it up from scratch here every year. It's very strange. I'm going to have to maybe take one extra break when Stu shows up with beignets, and he's promising glazed beignets. So, and truth be told, I'm not a, you know, I've said this before, I'm not a huge donut. Not really a mammoth donut guy. Donuts though at the racetrack and beignets are, you know, beignets are in a class by themselves in this town. Certainly. The ones that, who was it? Was it McGoey that, I think it was McGoey that turned me on to Morning Call. They got a sourdough recipe. Yeah, I think it was McGoey. Frank will join us actually at 11 Eastern. He's gonna stay through training hours. He's gonna stay right up till 10 o'clock downstairs as horses prepare for this final weekend. Four more days of racing here, and you know, they got the big 15 race card on Sunday, and they're not trying to stick another half card in. Don't forget, they lost that Sunday of racing last week, which, you know, certainly affected the NHC, to a degree. So that's why there's so many races on Sunday. They were trying to get some of the rescheduled spots in from last week. Well, good morning, Sirius 162 XM 207 Sports Zone 999, and at our website, stevebeck.com. And had a classic experience yesterday. Want to thank Grant Forster and his team, and I didn't realize that, and maybe this was an extra. Next time we talk to Grant, we'll have to ask. Yesterday, first of all, Grant did win that race yesterday, as somewhat promised or anticipated. Very nice job, by the way. Kevin Kilroy, he said it's going to be very straightforward, maybe a little chalky here yesterday. And he was dead on. He got everything. And in fact, he just missed. He said there's one thing, which was the horse that just fell short. But a nice job. And he also made it clear that Ben Curtis was a force to be reckoned with. And that is the case. Grant had the crawfish boil, and back Risen Star week, which is the normal crawfish. You know, the crawfish is very late. It's a late season, from what the mud bug aficionados say. The temperatures, it wasn't a great growing season for them. But now they were certainly good sized yesterday. I lean toward the shrimp. But everybody was thrilled, and it's always fun. It's always a great scene back there. And so thanks to Grant, and they were in a very celebratory mood, off the win as you'd expect. And they're actually done. Great way for the Forster Barn to head back to Louisville off a win. The horse that they've got in today, she's under the weather, so they're going to bypass that start today. Expect her to scratch. So that was fun. Got to see the Hirshes, Mr. and Mrs. Hirsch, and Kate and Bradar on hand. As she and Doug, not just jockey for position, Doug being, of course, a longtime agent, they're also jockeying their automobiles. Because one apparently was here, one in Florida, and so Doug had to fly and drive one car home, and now, you know, then last night was flying in. So looking forward to seeing Doug Brader. And, you know, Doug, a very frequent and successful contest player, and many years he's part of the NHC field. Not didn't happen this year, but Doug is very good. The jock agents overall are outstanding handicappers. They have to be. I mean, that's knowing all the horses on the backstretch for starters, and in the in a region, that's a big part of the job, and then from there, trying to decide, handicap the way fields come together, and the jack agent profession, we kid them because they're a funny bunch. That's right. Let's be honest. The jack agents are some of the great characters on the racetrack. we should get some opinion. With lots of opinions are coming. Magui, as I mentioned, top of hour three, we'll have the win using Thoroughgraph segment with Crafty, Jeff Franklin, and we'll touch base with Caitlin. If you didn't see yesterday, I think we mentioned most of the decisions, right? But as mentioned, Triple Espresso running at Turfway, Agate Road here, Alpine Princess in the Bourbonette. We heard Accommodate Eva, Dallas Stewart. Accommodate Eva is running in the Crescent City. So there's a couple more. There's a couple more I got to slip in as well. All right, as the morning goes on, let me get a little organized here. you're right, exactly. Catching up. Speaking of jocks, one story that I did not get to yesterday, and there's a few things. I'll take a couple of minutes here just to kind of clean up on aisle three from the weekend. The travel day Tuesday was quite necessary, but it also, it puts me in a, little bit on the heels, because you'd be surprised how much gets missed, including I want to mention the results of the Oaks and Derby future pool as well. The Jose Ortiz story from the last 48 hours. Ortiz is basically, I mean, I don't know if I would call it, you know, fully relocating, but he at least is going to ride in Kentucky through the spring, right? They're very interesting. And it's funny, I didn't see all of the internet reaction to this, but considering how often and how much carrying on, you know, over the years has you know, been about, you know, Irad and Jose, you know, riding together out of the same jocks room. You would think that that this would have been more widely, you know, hailed. But I didn't see. Maybe some of that had died down. I mean, there used to be some really silly stuff in that vein. So I saw where Taylor Rice is. She said, "Kentucky, here we come." I noticed that. She's excited. Good for her. No, it's good. Good for as Tony. We'll talk to Tony, I think, for a little bit today. We'll catch up a little bit because I got a couple of things that are fluid that I, you know, may cut out for. You know, it's good. Sometimes that's a positive for a jock, you know, get some fresh, I mean, and obviously there's plenty of crossover, right? There's plenty of the, you know, the outfits that he rides in New York, and Florida that are going to be, you know, that have barns in Kentucky. So, Jose Ortiz, that's one story to keep an eye on. Yesterday at this hour, we reached out for Bill Nader, and of course, there's the CHRB meeting this morning. Expecting here shortly to talk to Larry Swartzlander from the Racing Fairs, from CARF. California Association of Racing Fairs, and he says they've got a fully realized and fully fleshed out concept and plan for the Pleasanton dates, and that all the concerns that not necessarily the concerns that FIRST has are addressed, but some of the other, you know, some of the other concerns, like apparently wayward golf balls from the golf course that's in the infield at Pleasanton. So they said not to worry about that. There's, you know, there have been no, you know, no incidents with the netting that is up. I would think that, you know, if there's people playing golf while the races are running, I'm sure a lot of people would be betting the four horse. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I can't help myself. The four, no. See, this is why you pay the subscription. This is why you subscribe. See what happens when I get a good night's sleep. This is what you get. Oh boy, a couple of quick hits from the weekend. They're groaning here in the. in the press box from that nonsense. A couple of hits. And I mean, if you were listening over the course of the NHC broadcast, you heard some of these stake wins, but if you were not tuned in, Jackson Traveler The Jackson Traveler win. Interesting. And looking forward to talking to Steve Aspison next. The West Point 6-year-old. And he's a horse. In fact, his name comes up in... There was a couple of breeding notes. Chris McGrath and I think also... I think in Sid's, if I'm not mistaken, in Francis's piece, they're talking about Munnings and the Maryland bred. This is a notable win, actually, for him. And, you know, the question, he's never broken triple-digit buyer range. He's gotten his career best had been a 97, which he just equaled on Saturday. But given Munnings and you know if Jackson Traveler can, you know, can win himself, you know, another, he was already a Grade 3 winner, but now a multiple graded stake winner, and if he could knock off a big game, I mean, look at win. It could be on the same kind of path, right? If he could win himself a race like the Forgo. So, Flavian Pratt aboard. And that was Flavian did a great job holding him together and getting him to the wire. He got past Rivet, the other Asmussen, and Tejano Twist was coming too. Actually, Rivet went favored in there. Both he and Tejano Twist were both 6-5, and but Rivet got the asterisk. Asternia, Randy Morse, we live on Saturday. We were talking about Randy Morse. Asternia won that Purple Martin. The races at Laurel, and it was funny because the Johnson ended up scratching to four horses, and yet. There was a mild enough upset in there. I'm not sure how many people. I know I used Shaft's Bullet, paid $720 as the second choice, and you know it was a mandatory. And we absolutely couldn't have been more insistent that you lay off Nimitz class. Right, we did that with Cali too, but I mean, no, who was betting Nimitz class at 70 cents on the dollar, and you know he's sideways right now. George Weaver's going to have to kind of pull him back together. Shaft's Bullet, Gary Capuano, Mind Shaft's having himself some terrific, right? Another Mine Shaft stake winner. New stake winner for him. And owner Paul Fowler paid $16,000 for this horse as a Keeneland yearling. You know, he is a 5-year-old, but he's got low mileage. He's also now 5-9. Shaft's Bullet. And with that win, a 99 buyer. This is an emergent horse. We have to, when things calm down a little, we got to get to... Capuano and talk about it. This is a nice horse. Took a while and they were patient and they're getting rewarded. Winner at first asking at Laurel. Interesting. So keep an eye on him. The Not for Love. Take a hint for Capuano as well. And this one also did not go favored. Son of Bandbox, famous as Tappet's first notable son. And that was, who was on board? Jamie Rodriguez. And finally, Too Many Kisses. Tim Keefe for the McGinnises and Forrest Boyce. Almost 5-1. So that was the Laurel action. What else? The Queen, Hugo Andretti, BG Warrior, your winner with Angel Jimenez. And did we get the New York stuff? That Antonio Venice, we were on the air for that. Rudy and Manny Franco. The East View, Paul Barrow, Jose Lascano, Sweet Brown Sugar, Collected. And Gallia Princess, the American Pharaoh. In fact, that was, I think, that was part of the write-up that Francis and Sid did in their Substack observations. That was the cicada. Chosen Vron, we talked on air, and we'll hopefully talk to Eric Kruljack when we get out to California next week. The Pasadena, Stay Hot, Peter Urton, Summer Front with Antonio Fresu, and Doug O'Neill, Mario Gutierrez, Stay in Scam, Square Eddie, won the Irish O'Brien. It's always fabulous when St. Patrick's Day falls, you know, right on, yeah, when they can run the Irish O'Brien on St. Patrick's Day. I think was that everything? Oh, there was Riley Mott, and I've got to get to Riley as well. Won the Hutchison with that beeline, and Edgar Zayas and David Egan, and George Delgado with the launch and the Any Limit. So there was your stake. That was the stake review that I've been slow getting to. Miss a little, miss a lot. That's and I should mention too, because it happened while we were on the air. Rocket Can, that was a good comeback by Rocket Can. Last seen in the Kentucky Derby. We talk about a horse that was out of sight, out of mind, and forgotten about. Yeah, well, he and I did not see a figure on Rocket Can, but Vilmont with the Into Mischief Colt. This is just a, you know, that was that heady allowance that went as the 10th at Oaklawn. All right. So there we go. Let me check in. And you know what I might do? Because I haven't gotten Schwartzlander yet. Let me. It's 6:20. Let me slip Pete in here, because I know that he's got a I know he's got a 10 o'clock. So let me get Pete in here, and we can probably catch up on a handful of things with him, including Cheltenham. Back at Cheltenham. You can always count on a couple things at Cheltenham. You can count on Pete being there, and Sean Clancy being there, and you can count on Steve Anderson as well. They're all. How many times did you run into Clancy and Anderson?
Sean and I did shows every day, little 10-minute shows right before the races. They were very well received. I didn't see Steve this year. If he was here, he was doing a good job hiding. But yeah, seeing Sean, who's the reason I go to Cheltenham, he invited me for the first time 21 years ago, Steve.
Wow.
So it was a great thrill being able to reminisce with him about all the great experiences we've had over the years and pick a few winners as well. It was truly a blast.
Well, and we enjoyed, you know, Sean had a, from a handicapping standpoint, he had a fabulous Cheltenham.
Indeed, really terrific stuff. And what always amazes me about Sean is that as good as his pre-picking is, then when he has an opportunity to see horses in the paddock as well, he takes it to the next level. I'm actually eager to get him on some live shows. We're going to return our horse player happy hour games later in the season, and this year we're going to make it a little bit more of a live racing show between 4 and 6 on Thursdays. And I'm eager to get Sean in the paddock so he can show people some of his skill in this regard in real time, because he is, you know, Maggie Wolfendale level excellent when it comes to evaluating horse flesh in the paddock, and brings a lot of very valuable insight.
Well, that's a trip that I'd love to make, and I got to figure out the logistics on that. One breakthrough at a time. It took Clancy 6 or 7 years to get me to the Iroquois in Nashville. So
you have to come, and you know, between the connections that he has over here, the connections that I have over here these days, let us know, and we'll help get you teed up. Because I think, you know, obviously you do a great job from afar, but capturing the atmosphere when you're actually there is really something special, and I think it'd be a racing trip you'd never forget.
No, no doubt. And you know, one question that I did bring up last week, there was some reporting, Pete, that they've slightly, you know, priced themselves. They might be slightly pricing themselves, not out of the, you know, out of range, but you know, that the added race, you know, the seventh race each day, and you know, some of the same grousing and you know, lemon dry milking concerns that we hear about Saratoga regularly. I mean, did you sense some of that? The couple of ticks past midnight for the stand.
I'll say this, you know, I don't want to be all get off my lawn here, but I do think the racing was better in the 3-day format. And I think, and this is a phenomenon we've seen all over racing globally, giving horsemen too many choices, adding other grade one races for novices at intermediate distances, it hurts some of the classic races. And there's no better illustration of this than, you know, I mentioned when Sean and I went the first time, he'd gone before me. But when I went for the first time 21 years ago, I don't think there was an odds on favorite the whole meet, Steve. There were seven this time around. That's not really the spirit of what Cheltenham is. It's supposed to be a little more competitive than that. So I don't want to be all Debbie Downer. It hasn't ruined it or anything. But I do think the organizers, the jockey club, should take a long look in the mirror and see if there aren't some common sense improvements that could be made to the program to maybe restore it to a little bit of its sporting glory. I think that's a fair criticism. Well, I wouldn't want to go too far with it. As for the pricing and things like that, it did seem like, I mean, the crowds were certainly down from a couple of years ago. You know, some of that might have been artificially inflated by the post-COVID bump, etc. It's not like it was empty. You know, again, racing here generally does a good job giving opportunities to people of all different income levels. And, you know, I think I don't have the expertise to speak about it really, but I do think I would recommend the organizers, the jockey club, taking a long look and just trying to make sure that this event can be all that it can be for the great swath of racing fans who really live for it all year round. It is kind of like, for jump racing fans, Breeders' Cup, Kentucky Derby, it's all rolled into one, and it's a very special thing.
Yeah, you can tell that, and you know, the trio that I'm referring to with you and Sean and Anderson, I mean, that gives you an indication. I mean, the fact that you guys, there has to be something that really jumps in and you know, roadblocks you from attending. So all wild-eyed, you know, racing fans in general and passionate about the game. So that's enough of a recommendation. And speaking of missing things, one thing that the Cheltenham date has created is kind of a enjoyment interruptus for the NHC. And Pete, you know, the situation from a couple, but I guess last year really, with Super Bowl at you know, being scheduled and in Vegas, Horseshoe made the offer to NTRA to move the, you know, the NHC because it was going to conflict with Super Bowl, and as a result, we're locked into that third weekend in March, second third weekend range, and so it. You know, prevented the opportunity to join us at Horseshoe, and you would have been treated to some crazy spectacle of a win. Unbelievable what went on.
Oh, it was fantastic, Steve, and I can put out a thank you for me and other fans around the world for the coverage you provided to give even those of us who were, you know, whatever it is, 8,000 miles away, what felt like a front row seat to all that great drama, the sort of U-shaped pattern, as it were, of Mike Gillum with the hot start and the big, furious comeback. I mean, there was so many great stories. He did a great job capturing it all. And I do miss it, and I was sad selfishly sad to see that it looks like this March date is now becoming the date. So, you know, I'll have to figure it out where one year I'll miss Cheltenham and go do that again because, you know, it's too much fun. I love that weekend. It really helped me in my career to establish myself and meet so many great horse players out there. I really, I miss not being there, and I'll have to figure out a way by hook or by crook to get back. But to turn the tables on you for a minute, my friend, you talked about all the great stories. As somebody who was covering it and there with the bird's eye view, what was your sort of favorite story that came out of this year's NHC?
Well, probably the three personalities, the three individuals that each emerged Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. There were three distinct stories that were authored by players, starting with T.J. Sundy, who, you know, I think is best described as a fairly, you know, casual player, you know, that was a first-time qualifier, and he found himself, you know, in just a magical run on Friday to kick off the contest, and then he sustained it into Saturday and through Saturday, played like a absolute seasoned pro, holding on to his optionals, Pete, like Paul Sherman. I mean,
the name that came to mind for me too. When you said holding on to optionals, all I could think of was Paul Sherman.
At one point, I looked up and we were maybe an hour. There was maybe an hour to play on Saturday. And I turned to Hammer. I said, "Look at this." I said, "Sunday is sitting with eight optionals with like 11 to run." And I think, I mean, based on his kind of wide-eyed, you know, appearance to us on Friday, you know, the happy to be here, and you know, he's referencing Trotter and very good day and. And, you know, but then on Saturday, you know, he turned into a killer and he runs it all the way to the final table. It really spectacular. And then comes Seth Morris on Saturday, and Seth forges to the lead and, you know, with the dead apparel. And he was a lot of fun. He pressed forward, gets caught on the last, literally the last race, the penultimate race, he gets caught. And and then here, you know, here's your winner who was sort of like a bobber when you were a kid and fishing with the little red and white bobber that you'd attach to your line. And he had been on the board quite a bit early in the contest, and he would then fade a little bit and then pop back up. And first he has to rally with two wins in the last two races on Saturday to make the top 10%, and he's 64th. Then he wins the last two races to get to the final table, and then marches up the standings to win. He went from 64th Sunday morning with cards that everyone said were impossible to, you know, to really make any ground, and he made up the most ground in Sunday NHC history. It was astounding. I mean, he pick and prayed essentially, Pete. He made a commitment mentally to just, you know, pick the horses he thought were the most likely winner, not caring about price. And I can tell you, there's plenty of people that came away from this thinking, I got to do more of that. And instead of, you know, doing backflips and twisting themselves into pretzels that trying to rationalize price tries that it's a viable approach to say, I'm just going to pick the horse I think if they run this race 100 times is going to win the most.
It was an amazing picking performance, and I thought you know, mentally, what he did, I thought was smart in that it takes some of the second guessing out of it. It allows you to, you know, stay focused on the big picture, perhaps, when you're not trying to make these critical decisions every few minutes. I mean, having that plan, I think, really served him well. And it's a great story. I think when the final table format, when this three-day format was introduced, it was envisioned that you'd see, you know, this kind of action. I feel like the format, you know, did itself proud with the way that he was able to face drama at those cut lines and then not only succeed in terms of making cuts, but make that run all the way to number one. It's a great story. It was I'm sure, a very fun one for you to tell.
Well, and what's, you know, somebody, Andy Serling and I were talking Sunday night. I went for a walk after the banquet, and because Andy actually knows Seth and all the way back to their days at the American Stock Exchange. And he said, how did Seth do? I said, he got caught in the last jump. And he said, that's too bad. He said, well, what kind of guy is the winner? I said, the winner is a fabulous guy and you know, mainstream and most importantly, a guy, as we discovered, that sends it in, that has got a fairly serious handle. So he's going to be a terrific champion. And you know, you ask about the storyline. I mean, there's three names: Mike Gillum, Seth Morris, and TJ Sundy, who nobody knew on this, you know, environment in this community, really. And they, you know, they become, you know, new personalities. And that's what NHC does. That's what BCBC does. It introduces, you know, players on a wide basis, you know, to each other. And, you know, everybody's affection for the game and passion for it. I mean, that's what these events are best at.
I totally agree. The idea of a celebration of players that elevates players into stars, essentially, you know, a la the poker model, which is actually a good segue, Steve, into what I wanted to tell your listener base about today, because we have something pretty fun coming up at the weekend in conjunction with our friends at Adelphi Racing Club and also at the Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga, Kim Lear's new charity.
Well, have at it.
So we are doing, it's a two-round contest, basically. Round one is this Saturday, and the first round is very traditional. It's essentially a free contest. There is a $5 donation to the Thoroughbred Horses of Saratoga required that will go through the normal processing that they do over at horseplayers.com. You can find the game to sign up at inthemoneypodcast.com/contest. But here's the wrinkle. So what we're going to do is the top eight finishers from this contest on Saturday are going to advance to another contest next Saturday, Florida Derby Day, that is going to use a new format. Folks may have seen it before. It's actually the one that we used when we did the World Horse Player Tour show a couple of years ago. But it's really fun because it's live April, but mythical money, sort of like the World Series of Poker. Players will start with a set amount. I think it's going to be like, you know, $1,000 mythical dollars or whatever amount, doesn't really matter. But the idea is there'll be escalating minimum, essentially blind bets modeled on blinds in poker, escalating minimum throughout the card. You bet one horse per win each race. There are no max bets. You can go all in at any time. And there's going to be prizes for all eight that make the final table. But the top prize is going to be an expenses paid share in this really promising Echo Town colt that Adelphi Racing have put together. It's a horse, one of the horses that I'm in on with them. So it'll be a chance to, you know, see the game from the inside out and have some fun. Matt and Adelphi are a great team of people. That experience is going to be fun. And, you know, hopefully it'll be some people who know us, and my being involved is also maybe a small selling point as well. But it's really going to be a lot of fun. We're going to raise a bunch of money for Thoroughbred Aftercare, which is something obviously that we are both very involved in. But it's also just, I think this format, we're going to try to do this in a way where it becomes scalable, where we can have more content using this different type of final table format. I think it'll appeal to a slightly different subsection of players. and you know, maybe something else where we can tell some stories and create some names that people know, and it'll inspire the audience in terms of their own horse playing and wanting to get involved. So, yeah, we're calling it the Echo Town 8. It takes place on horse tourneys, and the place to sign up is inthemoneypodcast.com/contest. We're going to do a live stream for the final table. It'll be about a two-hour live stream on the 30th. We're going to have a very active chat. It'll be fun to hear what folks have to say, and we encourage people to sign up and play, and then hopefully watch us on the live stream. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, it does sound fun. Very cool. All right, so they got to move fairly quickly to get involved.
Yes, Saturday, the races have been, I think the lineup is up already. I should have checked that before I got on air with you. Apologies for that. But yeah, if you just go to, it's in the regular horse player schedule as well. If you go to horseplayers.com and navigate to the Saturday contest, you'll see it. But the easiest way to find it is through that little direct link I created, inthemoneypodcast.com/contest. That'll take you right there. You can see the races. And that the first round is just your typical, you know, $2 win place situation. But yeah, the prizes, you know, finishing eighth is basically the same as finishing first. You just want to get to that final table and compete for a share in the Echo Town Colt. And then we're going to come up with some other fun prizes, things like a month of our In the Money Plus service, where we do like our special derby package and stuff like that. We'll include some other things. Matt Lapierre mentioned maybe trying to organize some sort of Saratoga VIP day experience of the races. There'll be a lot of cool things to win. So if you make it to that final, get something cool. And yeah, I look forward to seeing a lot of At the Races listeners on there, as well as our usual In the Money media crew.
Well, I think I've got an extra treat too, Pete, because we're going to get a slight, call it a Royal Ascot early preview, because Stu Slagle wants to say hi to you.
Pete, it's good to chat again.
Always a pleasure.
It's always fun to chat with you, and since you're over the pond right now, I thought we have a perfect tie-in with the races here at Fairgrounds. Yesterday we saw a young horse have a great performance, and I'm going to make a prediction that this horse will be pointed towards the Commonwealth Cup at Royal Ascot. And I think if you might be able to get a bet down on him, you should. Yesterday at Fairgrounds in the fifth race, Wesley Ward brought out a second-time starter named I'm About to Go. And this horse won with ease. He's out of a first crop sire, Calix, who had a brief career in Great Britain. Three wins and one second, and two of those wins were at Ascot. And so this three-year-old, I would think Wesley would have a desire to point towards the Commonwealth Cup. It's a grade one for three-year-olds going 6 furlongs in June. And I know that, it's a filly against boys, but, you know, Wesley has nice horses.
He's done that before.
And I know it's a reach, and we're talking, 3 months from now, but since you're over there right now and we're here in the fairgrounds, I just thought we'd tie a nice bow around all of us. A horse that all the listeners should be watching for. It was a great performance yesterday, and a horse has a future.
I love that. That's fantastic. Yeah, Wesley's won that race before with a filly, so there's no reason he can't do it again. And he's made a career out of doing things people told him he wasn't going to be able to do. So I wouldn't worry about the difficulty of the task in that sense. Very exciting in prospect. And, he'll be breaking out some more runners as we get closer. Keeneland coming up, and this year there's also the tie-in between those races at Churchill Downs that are going to be offering spots to ask it. It's very gratifying to me. I absolutely love Cheltenham, and from a sporting point of view, there's nothing like it. But boy, as a flat racing fan, as somebody who works in flat racing, it's been so gratifying to me to see the increasing connections and cross-pollination between European racing and American racing. And I love the fact that it goes in both directions. You're making a good case for is the horse called I'm About to Go? Is that the name?
That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
That horse coming this way, Aidan O'Brien talking about City of Troy, potentially running, you know, yeah, we all knew, we heard the stories about, you know, maybe he'd run in the Breeders' Cup Classic, but the idea that he might come to Saratoga to run in a race like the Travers, I mean, it just, it brings a lot of extra juice to these events when you get the big international level of competition, and I'm here for it, boys.
And since we're up in the clocker stands, and, you know, everybody from my role as a stakes coordinator to the racing publicist, we're always paying attention to horses that are working in the morning, no matter where they are. And so since you brought up Kentucky and we're talking about Royal Ascot, I'll go out on a deeper limb. Wesley's working a horse that's had three bullet works in Kentucky named Johnny Come Lately. I think this horse is something everybody should put on their watch list. I don't know if he's going to run a Keeneland or a Gulfstream, but I would think with the precociousness that this horse has shown with the bullet works already, this horse might be a nice two-year-old target for Royal Ascot as well.
Great name, too. Johnny Come Lately. I love it. One for the stable male for sure. And it is true. There's more options than ever now between the Keeneland races that he's used traditionally. And then last year we saw those Royal Palm races, the winning you're in Ascot action from Gulfstream. We saw those races produce the winner of the Queen Mary for Black Tie Thoroughbred. So you know that there's a lot of different routes to go, and it's always fun to get an early line on it and have a way in to follow them. It's some absolutely great races.
This Johnny Come Lately is a hootenanny, and he's already been gelded, and it's a horse that Wesley bred, Johnny Come Lately.
Fun.
And this, the winner yesterday, and Kevin Kilroy talked about I'm about to go, which is one word for those that did not see it. It's I'm about to go. I'm about to go. 82 buyer, and now 2 for 2. Winner at first asking at Gulfstream, going back to December, and five furlong maiden winner, 5.5 yesterday, and in hand. And in command under the Loveberry, Jareth Loveberry riding. Loveberry at I know that, you know, that Wesley is tight with a lot of jocks, but bringing Jareth Loveberry to Ascot would be unbelievable.
I think J Love would do well.
That would
over
be
there.
A great story.
Right?
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah.
Excellent.
Always love it too. They're fascinated, and it gives me lots of appearances to do because they always want the dossier when a new rider comes up here. I remember a couple of years ago when Joel Rosario made his Ascot debut. It afforded me the opportunity to do a few extra interviews over here, given my opinions and such. So yeah, it's been fun in the last few years too. With obviously, you know, Ward sets the standard, but to see other American success, like we mentioned with George Weaver last year, it's great fun. I mean, Ascot is definitely about more than the money. It's an extremely special racing experience. You talk to any of the Americans who've made their way over, and you can see why so many circle it on their calendar as an event to target year after year.
Pete, great to catch up on all topics. A little NHC, a little Cheltenham, and then this Echo Town 8, a contest, a chance for players to hook into a colt. And going to see you. When are we going to run into you?
I will be at Keeneland opening weekend, if you'll be around for that. That's the next racing trip. I'm basically here for another week. Going to go out to my mom's for Easter and then basically head right down to the Bluegrass Stake and get in a few days early, maybe try to book a farm tour or two, maybe hit up our friends over at Horse Country for that, and then it'll be time for opening weekend. And then we really get serious in all of our Derby coverage over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com and all the new stuff we have cooking over on our YouTube channel. Doing a lot of YouTube exclusive content these days. So then that'll take over. I'm really looking forward to seeing you, of course.
I will see. I won't see you at Keeneland, but we'll catch up at some point, I would think, by May.
Derby, then, I would think.
Yeah,
after that. The next port of call for me, and we'll get a chance to see each other in person. But really appreciate the opportunity to come on, Steve, and talk to you and the listeners and Stu. And great job again with the NHC coverage. Just every horse player I talked to who couldn't make it out to Vegas, you were the conduit, and you did a fabulous job.
I appreciate it, and missed you out there. Pete Fornatel, everybody. Looms boldly and in the money, and the variety of info and entertainment. Pete, talk soon.
We'll be talking, guys. Cheers.
Let me continue on, too, with Stu Slagle, who this was way over and above. You didn't have to do this. I would have, even without the Binets, I would have been happy to publicize the stakes closings.
Well, you haven't had a chance to try these. These are from Antoine's Bakery in Metairie, and this is my third season in New Orleans, and I haven't had these until about a month and a half ago. One of the owners, Darren Dares, brought them into the racing office and treated us in the afternoon. And I will tell you that there are beignets, and then there are glazed beignets for Antoine's. When your conversations with Neil Pessin, this is a foodie town. If you
That's
get some
sure.
good food, you get some nice tastes. I just wanted to share this, share these with you. And I also want to echo Pete's comments over the weekend. I checked out with our cancellation on Sunday. With the weather, I was able to listen to your broadcast with Hammerly and Ng on the final table. I think you did a great job of highlighting the way people approach the end game of a tournament and being able to your production value segueing in and out of the races was amazing. And I think you did a superb job of highlighting the event. I've been there as a spectator a couple of times, and I think you captured the feel of the camaraderie that the players have there. And it's the performance of the winner was amazing.
Really,
there's so many people win these contests with a handful of bombs and luck. And this wasn't luck. This was skill. And kudos to the winner.
I appreciate the kind words. And it's just so much fun. Rich Ng will be with us later. And Rich wrote the nicest thing on Twitter the other day. And I haven't actually adequately responded to it. But I think that's the eighth time we've done this. And it's just such an engaging scenario because you've got. I mean, the basics of horse playing. Then there's the overwrap of the format and as you talk the game strategy. Then there's the personalities and there's all walks of life. There's lots of industry participants that are invariably involved. There's stars. There's an array of stars in the contest world that are always there and we talk to, but probably the most pleasurable aspect is the emergence every year of anonymous players from all walks of life, and it makes it very easy to and promote, and I'm happy to promote the game, and so there's some follow up actually to the weekend, like Rich Resnick, who made a bold incursion into the top 10, ended up settling for a finish in the teens. But Rich is a guy that had been an avid player for years, now is retired, had gotten a little frustrated with certain parts of the game that lots of people are getting frustrated with, and has found contests as a way to get back in the game. And for the low risk, high reward, conceptually, he's gets into a week he could afford, to play the 175 buy-ins, but he makes it a challenge to himself by playing in the qualifiers. If he qualifies into a weekend, so be it. If he doesn't, he doesn't. But he's playing the game again, and he's involved in the sport again, albeit in a different fashion. So there's so many positives to the contest formats, and whether you're a BCBC aficionado that is a bankroll challenge player, or you enjoy the purity of the NHC concept. And I said many times, on particularly on Sunday, Mike Gillum was a throwback. His win is a throwback to the origins of the contest as a pure handicapping exercise. Who is the horse that's most likely to win? And I think that the contest environment has gotten away from that to a large degree. So there's always an interesting story to the winner's approach, and to a lot of the players that fleck the top part of the standings. And there's still plenty of stories to tell.
And I know you probably know a little of this, but for the listeners, I know Pete Fornatale from my time when I worked with Horse Player Magazine prior to leaving corporate America and becoming a jocks agent and then a racing official. And so when I lived in Southern California, I used to go to the contests in Reno and Las Vegas. And when the contest began with the NHC, when Ken Kirchner, Jeff Sotman, and everybody was working with Keith Hamlin from the beginning, I got to see the formation of the desire of wanting to try to model this after the World Series of Poker,
right.
trying to find a way for a moneymaker, someone to come out of the blue to qualify and work their way up and be, give everybody a shot. And I think that's the one great thing about these contests and horse racing in general. Sport embraces everyone. You can be at the rail standing between a priest and an ex-con, and no one cares, because all you're focused on is what horse is going to run and who they like and who you like, and your ability to share that conversation. The rubbing of shoulders is egalitarian in horse racing. Everybody is interested in who's got the fastest horse and who's got the best opinion. And you see that in the contest. You see that in horse racing. It's it is a great place to build friends in the contest, and it's and lifelong connections. And I mean, I met Pete in contests, I don't know, probably late 90s, early 2000s, and we've known each other for a long time. So these events have been around, and they are. They're a great place for people to learn about the game and make connections across the country and friends. And the fact that this has been going on for 25 years, one, makes me feel old, and two, makes me happy that this type of endeavor is still thriving. People love the sport and want to partake in it.
Well, speaking of partaking, a couple different things that I can utilize with your visit. First of all, thanks again for the bidets. As soon as we take a break, I'm going to make a fresh pot of coffee. I finally got the coffee machine going. I think I'm the only person that drinks coffee in this press box every year. I have to reorient that machine. It's crazy. It's unbelievable. I have to fill it with water. It's always got to be filled.
I couldn't survive a day without a cup of coffee. I'm a caffeine addict. It's a necessity.
As you mentioned, third winter here, stakes coordinating, but of course, starting to look back to Altoona, Iowa, and Prairie Meadows. When do we start?
The stall offs are due on April 2nd for anybody's interested. First day of racing is
2 weeks.
May 10th. We run all the way through September 28th. It's a good meeting for those people who have mid tier horses. Not everybody's lined up for a Keeneland or a Saratoga or a Del Mar meet. We have great purses. Maiden special weight start around 34,000. Allowance races are in the same range. It's a nice place to race in the summer. Evening racing keeps the temperature down compared to some other places where it's going to be hot in the afternoon. Looking forward to starting up, and it's our big festival is the weekend after 4th of July. I believe 4th of July is a Wednesday, so that Friday and Saturday night following is our Iowa Festival of Racing. And these are These are nice events. Some of the horsemen who are racing in the stakes this weekend have raced there. Ken McPeak has won recently. Brad Cox has, brought Nick's Go a few years ago. And hold on 1 second. Let me kill this alarm. It's reminding me to bring beignets to the Steve Vick show. last year, Steve Asmussen even had a $98 winner in the festival. I don't know how that horse went off at that price, but people had an opportunity to see nice horses there during the festival. We have competitive racing during the year between Jan Arnett, Lynn Klebrad, Kelly Martinez, Kelly Von Himmel, Tanner Tracy, who also races here in the fairgrounds in the winter. It is a good place for people to bring their horses in the summer. So, once again, stall apps are available on Prairie Meadows website, and love to have some new shooters come in.
Well, and part of the summer activities, the HBPA convention coming to...
yes, and I believe it is. I don't remember which weekend, but it is coming to Altoona. I know that John Moss will be coordinating those efforts, and it's fun to have people come to town and visit. That's the best part about racing. When the big races come, you realize how small the racing world is. People will show up that you've known from parts unknown and they haven't seen forever, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, good to see you again.
Now, first stake, the Goldfinch, May 11th, and as you mentioned, the Iowa Festival of Racing. That I love the way it's run. The three, the races on Friday night, and then into Saturday. Jimmy DeVito will invade. Jimmy always seems to have whether it's Coach Jimmy Lee or I see he's got a new coach monikered horse.
We're always looking for people to come in. And then you mentioned the Goldfinch. Yesterday, I actually took the first stakes nomination for that race from a trainer who's spending the winter here in Fairgrounds. So, it's amazing how your schedule and hats overlap, and you take one off, put the other one on, and it's we're looking forward to a good season.
You know, I'm just looking at the Iowa Derby, Iowa Oaks, and the Cornhusker, July 6th. Is one of these new Nebraska outfits, are they going to try to boost the Cornhusker back to Nebraska? is there going to be a battle over the rightful owner of the Cornhusker?
I think possession is 90% of the law.
Yeah.
We have it now. We're happy with it, and the horsemen in Nebraska are lucky to have a mini renaissance beginning, but we're not willing to surrender our crown jewel.
Well, and of course, the Iowa bred program probably deserving of a visit as we get closer to the meet. I should have somebody visit because there's some Iowa breds that have ventured out to greener pastures, but to hunting big game.
Mama's Thoroughbred had, and I'm going to forget the name of the horse, but Mama's Thoroughbred had an Iowa bred winner in one of the sophomore stakes in Tampa earlier this year. Tanner Tracy's had some Iowa bred winners here at Fairgrounds, even on the turf. It's wherever they go and they ship, some are ones that you definitely have to pay attention to. It's the sport is definitely doing well. We have some nice Iowa bred owners the Donegal Aldebaugh, Maggie Moss.
Absolutely,
we've got nice racing and nice horse people to build upon.
There's no doubt, that one of the few venues at this juncture that I have not had a chance to visit. But I when I was in Kansas City, I got to Exarban, but that sort of is predates. I think when did Prairie Meadows open?
I'm thinking mid-80s, if I can remember.
Yeah, because I don't think I was in Kansas City 84, 85. There was Woodlands and there was obviously Exarban, but I don't remember an Iowa Quad Cities. Quad Cities, right? Had a
I thought that was standard bread.
It is. Yeah, it is standard bread.
And but I'm thinking maybe 86, 87. I know that they started in March, and I remember watching the video because Cindy Murphy won the first race, and she recently retired, and she won on she won a nice stakes race at the close of the end of the meet, and we got to see the replays, and I just, you know, love racing at any time of the year, but that opening weekend for the first meet was, and little snow flurries in the background, so I'm sure everybody was thinking, what are we getting ourselves into? But it's rolling now.
Where did you grow up? And because you're always so shy about coming on, so this is my chance.
Oh, I was born in Akron, Ohio, and a little piece of trivia. I was born in the same hospital as LeBron James and Steph Curry, but unfortunately, I don't have those skills.
Akron, you got a different skill set.
Akron Children's Hospital. Lived there for, you know, the first decade of my life, then moved to Texas, and I grew up in Texas. Went to the University of Texas, and hoping that we don't embarrass ourselves in the first round of the tournament, but we're in tough this year. I made my way to Illinois, and I was in grad school at the University of Illinois, and at some point in the process, I decided I was not cut out to be an academic scientist, and had started following racing when pari-mutuel racing was re-legalized and while I was at the University of Texas. First track I ever went to was Bandera Downs. And when I went to Illinois, they just legalized off-track wagering in the state of Illinois. And near the track, near campus, was an off-track betting parlor where I, by pure luck, met David Block, the owner of Team Block, and just befriended him, and I was following the races, and, you know, just a, you know, long hair hippie grad student, and talking to the businessman, and everybody in the parlor was always asking, who's going to win today? And I was always asking, how did the horse come out of the race from last week? So we built the relationship. I was invited to the track and got to visit Chris Block's barn, and Chris is now, sure, turns out later, he's now here and racing this weekend. Uvra is going to be in, and she's an amazing horse. But I met the Blocks there, and started getting more and more involved in following the sport as a fan. And, that experience at Sportsman, Hawthorne, and Arlington helped me grow as an aficionado of the game, and from there, I've traveled for work and for to Southern California, where I met Tom Quigley by happenstance in the paddock. We're just one day talking. I'm standing next to him in Quigley's corner. I had no idea who he was, and I've got marks in my program that at that point I was keeping my own database of before anybody else had it, in the bottom of the form, of maiden statistics of how certain horses did, maiden races, dirt short, turf short, and just had my own notes. We started talking. A year later, they won a website for the magazine. I had some technical skills, because at that point I was a Unix system administrator.
Huh.
I started helping them out, and one day I got burnt out on being in the dot-com world, and the dot-coms I worked at went belly up, and I had one of them that had some stock options that I didn't get to cash out until like 10 years later, and it wasn't life-changing, and And I just said, enough of waking up at 2 in the morning to go fix computers so that people on the other side of the world can use it. I want to do something else. And decided to become a jocks agent, and knew I wasn't going to be able to start in California. So I went to Sunland Park in New Mexico, heard the purses were good, and brought a couple riders from California. They quit me within the first week, and and from there I just fought and clawed my way along, and it was probably the biggest mistake in my life, because being a jocks agent and a successful one is not really built upon being a good handicapper. It's built upon being a good salesperson, a good politician, building rapport. I wasn't prepared for the job. I did a poor job for the guys I represented. After a couple of years, I begged one of the tracks to give me an opportunity to become a racing official, because the game bit me. I didn't want to go back to the corporate world, and became a racing official at Retama Park. And
wow.
Quickly tying ourselves back into the earlier conversation, I was at Johnny Come Lately. I didn't grow up in the game, and I had this idea that the only way that I was going to climb was to be willing to take lateral jobs, to move from track to track and move up. And I've now worked in, a dozen different racetracks along the way, and find myself here in the winter and Iowa in the summer.
It's a terrific combination, and I've known you and I've seen you involved and attached to different racing offices for as long as I've been closely involved. And you do a tremendous job. For those that are on Twitter, Stu has interesting statistics, and you still track things and keep your own stats that, some cases they're just esoteric about, and of interest. Other times they're directly applicable to, to betting. You've obviously got, that infectious mind. And so many people like you that, created their own figures, and, helped change the game. People like Andy Beyer, of course, and CJ Makowski with what CJ did with his pace figures. There's so many people that, the game appeals to minds like yours and people like you that are, that are intellectually curious and have certain, a certain skill set, puzzle solving, and these are the features that we should sell to prospective players.
I agree. This is anachronistic now, but there's two types of people when they open up the newspaper: the people that go to the horoscope and the people that go to the crossword puzzle. The horse racing is built for the people that go to the crossword puzzle, or Sudoku, or the Kokoro.
Yeah,
they want to think from what they're fun.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with the people who want to turn their, turn their brain into a lower gear and relax and have other forms of entertainment. But there are those of us that, whether it's poker, bridge, trivia contests or whatever, there are people that want to engage their mind. And the sport is amazing because every day, every race is different. The 20-some years I've been in racing, there's things I see from day to day, whether it's as an entry clerk, a claims clerk, stakes coordinator, that I had never seen in the last 20 years. So there's variety. Things are different. The players are different. The horses are different. It's not, it's a constant solvable problem, and it's I find that part of the game, an exciting thing to sell.
Yeah, I 100%. This case has been made on a widespread basis, and we don't take nearly enough advantage, of it in terms of marketing the game. I mean, I've said, to do outreach to math clubs. I mean, high school math clubs, and that type of, we've talked about so many different things that we should be doing to indoctrinate, we talk about a next generation. I mean, there's
and when we saw a little start in that direction 2 years ago when I'm not gonna think of who the sponsor was. I think it was the New York Thoroughbred Breeders that put on the Big Data Bowl. And they provided a data set, and let people produce a model, and the winners were presented at the Racetrack
That's
Symposium.
Right. That's right.
I guess it would have been in 2022.
Yeah, 2 years
and,
ago.
And I think was it last week or the week before Equibase announced
they did. That's right.
A free data set, and I downloaded it as a healthy amount of data, and it's going to require some effort. Not everybody's used to working with an XML format, but they provided a lot of data that people will be able to try to come up with new ideas that we were talking about earlier. And there's some ideas that I had in my head that I've never approached because I never had a data set big enough to try. But I think, you know, the addition of Pat Cummings used to refer to in his Thoroughbred Idea Foundation newsletter, that free data, that is a avenue that will grow the game. And I understand that Equibase and the Jockey Club have monetized that as a revenue source. But the fact that they've embraced making a set of data free, I think will help grow the game and for all different facets. The unintended consequences, we don't know what new statistic is going to be invented. We don't know how it's going to be used, if it's going to encourage growth, and somebody's going to take a shot at saying, I'm going to use this to come up with a way to acquire horses for my claiming stables, or if I'm going to use this as a way to prepare for handicapping contests. The introduction to math clubs is starting, and people are reaching out. The last time I went to the National Handicapping Contest was the first year of the COVID in 2020, and about a month or two after that, I went to the Sloan Sports Analytics Business Conference for the first time that same year. And which Lisa Lazarus recently spoke at, and just to be there and think about how the other sports are using analysis for everything from player evaluation to gambling to ticket sales to scheduling, the amount of diversity of how people were approaching things from video capture of pole vaulters to hockey analytics and everything. Just that the fact that in a matter of 4 years, I went from only having, I think Kip Levine was a speaker that the year I went, and he was there representing the broadcast company, but not horse racing. To the point that, 4 years later, we have someone representing horse racing. We're seeing that expansion of, the embrace of numbers and analytics. So I think that growth will happen. But we know from other sports, there's a huge resistance of people that don't like analytics of, why are they going for, a 56-yard field goal instead of making a trying to convert a first down,
right?
All that, everybody saying, analytics is whatever, bunk, or I don't want you to bleep me out, but there's still a movement in mainstream sports to not embrace analytics. But the fact that horse racing is being embraced by analytics, and analytics is being used by horse racing, is helps us grow in a different avenue. So I think there's still a place for the pageantry this weekend. The pageantry for the Louisiana Derby is different than the pageantry for other races. The in comparison to what we were talking about, Royal Ascot, there's not going to be any top hats or tails here on Saturday. There's going to be attire more appropriate for Mardi Gras parade than not, but it's still the pageantry for this event. And all the pageantry for all the sports, it doesn't replace it. So there's racing's big enough to embrace all of it. But I come from the path that, you know, wants to embrace the puzzle solving, and this has been a great puzzle. The puzzle of, having been a stakes coordinator for a couple of years, the puzzle of filling the funnel with potential horses is a different one for me to solve. You're reaching out to hope and prestige, and trying to encourage as many people to take a shot. And at the same time, you're competing against other tracks that are well resourced with purse money, and trying to figure out, you know, who's ducking who you convince to run here versus in other spots. It is a different kind of a problem, and I've been learning over the last couple of years of how to get more and more horses in, it's a different problem for me. It's a social problem. It's a problem of how am I collecting information from daily interaction with jocks, agents, trainers, and owners, trying to figure out what they've got planned, where they're headed, and their stable agents are letting me know we may not be looking that way with this race or that race. And, you know, it's an extension of hustling in the race office where you have to be prepared for daily rejection of, on a day in the race office, hey, how would you like to run in the third race next Thursday? That's different from how would you like to pay $1,000 to run in the third race in 2 weeks? And so you have to have a better feel for who belongs, who thinks they belong, and be prepared to know that maybe 2/3 of who you're going to even get commitments to are going to be afraid of who's in the race or have other options, or they're going to come up sick or whatever. You have to be prepared. What happens if do you have a field that will stay together if it rains and it comes off the turf? And all these things are different from looking at numbers and saying, you're projected to be a great horse in 2 months. And, you have to build that relationship. And as you mentioned, I've been shy to come on your show, and that's because I'm a natural introvert. So this has been a lifelong battle for me to get to the point where I'm talking to strangers, trying to befriend them, trying to get them to trust me to share information with me that they probably don't want their competitors to know of where they're headed, or, you know, this is not our goal, or this is our goal. And I mean, there's some days where, you know, you're just trying to build that rapport, the puzzle's different. So I embrace, you know, learning this puzzle, and I'm very proud of what we come up with this weekend. And I think this is a point where I have to admit that I'm lucky. This track is one of the oldest tracks in the country. We have winter racing where there's less competition from the summer tracks. I have a great history of the horses that have come out of here. My predecessors, my boss, who set up good connections with people who want to keep running at the fairgrounds. Scott Jones and Jason Boulay have built a strong program here at fairgrounds. Churchill Downs has created a great environment for people who want to prep their horses here for the first Saturday in May, and the Kentucky Oaks as well. And, you know, hopefully the Greatest Stakes Committee will keep looking at the success that we have with the Fairground Oaks and maybe give us consideration for an upgrade. I'm lucky enough to be in a position where I'm building upon the foundations of that have been here for 100 years, and it keeps growing. So it aids in my ability to do a good job, and I'm lucky with everybody who's willing to share information and help, whether they're from the racing office team or just connections in the from jock's agent, assistant trainers, everything from horse haulers. You know, we all that is, you know, is a crazy puzzle to put together.
It's an interpersonal, an interrelated, organic entity, and it's very cool, actually, that you've chosen this path and are testing yourself, you know, basically, you're with your own personality. And it's also, Stu Slagle's been our guest. It's also a testimony to you that, you know, you've made these adjustments along the way to get to this point. And you're a fabulous addition to any racing office and any racing department.
I appreciate that. And it's, I think I'm going to take a quick sidebar. Racing offices right now struggle to find help. People in the game are retiring and aging out, looking for new people to come in. Not everybody is going to go through the University of Louisville or the University of Arizona.
Right.
And people can come in with different backgrounds like I did from out of the blue. If you have a desire, there are enough racetracks that need help that you can reach out, walk in an entry level spot and grow and have an opportunity to move up in the game. And I would encourage people who are interested to take a shot at that, because every year, every racing office calls everybody and says, I need somebody. Do you know somebody? Well, he overlaps with this calendar, that calendar, they won't fit. Or we're always looking for new talent, and that talent comes from interest and being able to grow. And so I was able to do that with the mentors I've had in the game, and hopefully other people are willing to take a swing and jump in, and we can help them grow as well and build the future of the game.
I love it, and I'm actually glad you went into this direction, and to encourage people to knock on the door at the local racetrack, go right into the racing office. Somebody might have to tell you where it is and inquire. And while we're doing that, we got to head to the break. I've got Larry Schwartzlander is going to join us next from the from CARF, the California Association of Racing Fairs. He will present the Northern Cal case, essentially. We'll talk. But I also want to use this as a segue. The University of Arizona has got a new position, assistant professor of practice position available. And they're looking to hear from people. Responsibilities as an assistant professor, the professor of practice, will take on the pivotal task of delivering a minimum of 14 units of the program's core coursework, reporting directly to the director of the School of Animal and Comparative Biomedical Sciences, the Agricultural Life and Environmental Science Department. You will play a pivotal role in shaping the academic experience of the students beyond the teaching portion. The role encompasses administrative and service. You'll assist in the planning and execution of the annual Global Symposium on Racing. You all know what that entails. They're seeking candidates with a master's degree in animal science or a related field, or 10 years of experience in the relevant teaching subject, meaning the racing industry. So actually, Stu, you could, if you're interested, you could go back to academia.
I love the racetrack too much. I want to be here as much as I can.
Well, this was...
But it's a great position for those who... that want to teach, and there is definitely a need for that position, and I I wish people just had their personality matches that job, apply for it. It's a, you know, the history of people who have been in that position. Right, I'm still friends and confidant with Doug Reed,
sure.
Even though I never went to the program. Doug, who was associated with the program for so long, is a like mind with me. We bounce ideas off each other, and I've learned from him. So I wish anybody who wants to approach that, take a shot at it.
Well, and you can go to the University of Arizona's career portal, or get a hold of Denise Ferris at RTIP. And I'm just, let me see, I must have Denise's, there we go, D. Ferris, DPHARRIS, at cals.arizona.edu. All right, Denise Ferris, D. Ferris, with two R's, at cals.arizona.edu. Stu Slagle, thanks for the... Can't wait. I'm going to make the pot of coffee right now so I can enjoy the Binet. We're going to talk to Larry Swartzlander. We're going to talk to Dr. Stephen Allday. Horse Health Today brought to you by Luberson and Reborn to get that ataxia explainer, as promised. Then we'll have Magui. Frank will be here, top of the hour. We'll go through the card with his binoculars. When using Thoragraph. Ahead as well with Crafty Jeff Franklin, speaking of legendary jock agents, and Rich Eng, too, as well. Lots to do yet. Second half at the races, live from Fairgrounds. Stu, thank you.
Thank you for being here, Steve, and look forward for everybody coming out to watch the Louisiana Derby weekend.
Back after this to NOLA.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Brett, I think we've built a brand at this point.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Caravel in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
Pennsylvania and the PHPA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none. The best Breeders' Awards and Stallion Awards in the country.
We're racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky. Please consider Bleeder Shield, the leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join